There are 23 active Democratic presidential candidates, according to NPR's count, and we have been speaking with many of them. Today, California Congressman Eric Swalwell in Washington. And Congressman, you have got a record of accomplishments on Capitol Hill already. What part of that record do you plan to highlight in your campaign for the White House?
It's not just my record in Congress that I'll take on my campaign to the White House. It's the experience of being the first in the family to go to college, knowing why people work hard and what they expect it to add up to, and being a father of two kids, paying off our student loan debt, fighting insurance companies, and worrying about their safety in schools. But in Congress, what distinguishes me, I think, from a lot of the other candidates is you're not just getting a voice for the future and a 38-year-old candidate. You're getting somebody who has fought for access to education and the legislation I've written around student loan debt relief, who sat on the House floor for 26 hours after the Orlando Pulse shooting and worked to get a majority in the House so that we could pass background checks, and as our democracy was on the line after the Russian interference attack, led the way in the work I did with my House Intelligence Committee colleagues and on the Judiciary Committee to make sure the rule of law was standing.
Talk about your interest then in safety and specifically the gun buyback programs that you've proposed.
My top priority as president will be to make sure that in every community, whether it's at a church, whether it's at a school, or whether it's on your street, that you're free from gun violence. What we can do is pass background checks in the Senate, which I would sign into law. I'm the only candidate calling for a ban and buyback of every single assault weapon in America. But also, I've gone across America to places like Philadelphia and Indianapolis and Houston and Chicago to understand the root causes of gun violence in those communities, seeing that a lot of times it's just a failure to invest in hope, like good jobs and education and healthcare for people who really, really need it.
So there are a couple of aspects to this that I want to ask you about. One is when you talk about buying back every single assault weapon, it seems pretty inconceivable that that could be done on a practical level. How would you do it even financially? What would fund it?
I'm not even the first person to conceive it. Actually, you know, the Australians did it in the 90s after a mass shooting there. They were able to buy back 700,000 assault weapons. My plan, and we've introduced it into the Congress, would have a two-year period to buy the weapons back at market rate. If people do not want to sell their assault weapon back, they could possess it only at a shooting range or a hunting club. But the idea being that these weapons belong on our battlefields, not in our communities. You know, the cost could be as high as, you know, $15 to $20 billion, we estimate. But I believe that is a lot less to pay than the cost of loss for a family who would lose someone, and also the cost of the trauma that our kids are going through.
You know, did you say it would cost $15 billion to buy these assault weapons back?
My legislation proposes to pay market rate. And so, you know, just our estimate is that it would be about a $15 to $20 billion program, which of
where
course
would you, where would you get that?
Reduce what we spend on national defense. You know, our national defense budget continues to go up, up, and up, and we have no major combat operations. So, you know, the nuclear weapons budget, which is $1 trillion over 30 years, is one place.
Some of your competitors in the Democratic field have come out with $1 trillion proposals for reckoning with climate change. Where does climate change lie on your priority list?
I come from the generation that's going to actually live with the consequences of inaction in the past on climate change. You know, it's estimated that in 12 years, if we continue on this path of essentially not addressing carbon emissions, the effects will be irreversible. What I would like to do in my plan, I would invest in direct air capture technologies like carbon capture, carbon sequestration, and carbon reuse so that we can bring our country to carbon neutral or negative. What we can do if we seek to take, say, in the first year, 10 million metric tons of carbon out of our oceans and out of our air, and then have a goal to double it each year, the cost will come down as we do that through economies of scale, and that's the way to get to carbon neutral.
Would you push for a carbon tax?
I'm open to that. I'm certainly open to anything that will reduce the carbon in the air, but also to allow people to keep working. And that's been the challenge here as I've gone across the country. You know, I talk to pipe fitters and laborers, and they tell me that if your plan just puts me out of work, you know, I'm going to vote for my job. And I get that. And I want to make sure
What do you say to them?
Well, I tell them that, you know, there's a way for us all to be responsible in the companies that are emitting carbon, and the government who has an interest in people working and individuals and having responsibility to, you know, get current skills, that you shouldn't have to lose your job, that these companies should have technologies that bring their emissions down to carbon neutral or carbon negative. And for the next generation of workers, we need to make sure there's a skills bridge to the green collar economy of wind, solar, and alternative fuel cells.
As you mentioned, all of these issues come at a cost in terms of jobs. And this is always an issue, of course, for voters. But I wonder to what extent that you think you're going to have to reconcile that issue with your stand on these climate change matters.
I want to take away that false choice for workers that you have to choose between your job or addressing clean air and clean water.
Some people, is it really a false choice? People who work especially in areas that are steeped in coal and have worked in coal for generations?
If we put an expectation on coal companies or fossil fuel companies that they're going to have to bring their sites, you know, to carbon neutral and that they're going to have to invest in skills training and, you know, pay and benefits for their workers, I don't think it's unrealistic. But people at their core, they want to work. They don't want, you know, a subsidy or a handout. They want to work, or they want to have, you know, real skills that can allow them to have that dignity of work. And I think we've missed that in the past. You know, and the president is missing it now in his, you know, trade proposals where he's giving aid instead of trade to farmers. The frustration isn't as much about, you know, losing the paycheck. It's just the dignity and being able to provide for your family and look them in the eyes and let them know that, you know, you are working to, you know, in providing for them.
Congressman Swalwell, a number of other Democrats running for president have called for Medicare for all. Senator Bernie Sanders has a bill out that would potentially eliminate private insurance altogether. If you're elected, what would you do to better health care in this country?
I like most of Senator Sanders' bill. I've supported it. The part that I would modify is I would still give people a choice for private insurance. So Medicare for anyone who wants it would be my modification. But I don't want to limit this debate to coverage. Coverage is important. But what we've always done best as a country is find the unfindable and solve the unsolvable and cure the incurable. And I see an opportunity to lead by, you know, expanding our investments in genomics research and data sharing and targeted therapies and seeing innovation also as a way to bring down the cost, extend the quality of life, and put a lot of new jobs in the life sciences in disconnected communities that need it.
One of the things that you've said in your statements is that voters should elect a young family to the White House. When you do, you'll get a voice that fights for solutions on safety, prescription drugs, health care, child care. You don't mention foreign policy and America's relationship with the rest of the world. What would your foreign policy priorities be?
We're going to get our friends back. And the way you reduce what we spend at home on national defense, which is at a cost of repairing our bridges and roads and putting tablets in the hands of our kids or having affordable prescription drugs, the way to reduce what we spend is to have friends in the world to rely on treaties. And so as a member of the House Intelligence Committee, I think the American people have seen I've defended our democracy as it's been on the ropes. I've stood up in favor of our allies rather than to diminish them. So I will take the oath and then go on a global affirmation tour and assure NATO allies that we're still with them, assure the Japanese and the South Koreans that we value our presence in their country as a way to check China and look into North Korea, but also to pledge to host in the United States a new climate summit so that we can lead from the front when it comes to climate.
What would you do about Russia's influence in U.S. elections, specifically through manipulation or compliance by tech companies?
The Russians will feel the pain until they acknowledge what they did. And
but what does that mean?
Feel the pain. Right now they've caused in part the destabilization of Eastern and Western Europe and what they've done in Syria and the migrant crisis. And they've seen a fractured Europe, which has led to, I think, an inability for countries to unite and stand against Russian aggression. They've put pressure on countries who want to join NATO. And it takes, I think, American leadership to stitch those countries back together, to find ways and resources for them not to be so dependent on Russia, so that when you need Russia to feel the pain and you need to isolate them and alienate them, you can do so in a unified way.
California has certainly felt the impact of the immigration crisis going on the U.S.-Mexican border. And I wonder what your proposal would be to handle immigration, knowing that there are more than 100,000 migrants who tried just last month to get into the United States.
On immigration, I would bring leadership where the president gives us only showmanship. I would dramatically increase the humanitarian resources there, the number of judges to adjudicate the cases, the facilities that process individuals so they're not sleeping on concrete slabs and only able to have space blankets. I don't disagree with the president that Mexico has a big role to play in all of this. I think he's right to identify that. And I just believe that the way the president talks about Mexicans and the way that he engages with Mexico is not productive. And again, we need leadership rather than showmanship.
California Democrat Congressman Eric Swalwell, who's running for president. Nice to speak with you. Thank you.
Thank you, Lisa.